19th Principle. Only limited and carefully defined powers should be delegated to government, all others being retained in the people. No principle was emphasized more vigorously during the Constitutional Convention than the necessity of limiting the authority of the federal government. Not only was this to be done by carefully defining the powers delegated to the government, but the founders were determined to bind down its administrators with legal chains codified in the Constitution. It will be recalled that one of the reasons many of the states would not adopt the original draft of the Constitution was that they feared the encroachments of the federal government on the rights of the states and the people. The first 10 amendments were therefore added to include the ancient inalienable rights of Anglo-Saxon freemen, so there could be no question as to the strictly limited authority the people were conferring on their central government. Notice how carefully the 9th and 10th Amendments are worded. The 9th Amendment. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. The 10th Amendment. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. The people felt that the hedging up of federal authority was absolutely essential because of their experience with corrupt and abusive governments in the past. Alexander Hamilton commented on this by saying, quote, "There is, in the nature of sovereign power and impatience of control, that disposes those who are invested with the exercise of it to look with an evil eye upon all external attempts to restrain or direct its operations. This tendency is not difficult to be accounted for. It has its origin in the love of power. Power controlled or abridged is almost always the rival and enemy of that power by which it is controlled or abridged. This simple proposition will teach us how little reason there is to expect that the persons entrusted with the administration of the affairs of the particular members of a confederacy, the federal government, will at all times be ready with perfect good humor and an unbiased regard to the public weal to execute the resolutions or decrees of the general authority. The reverse of this expectation results from the constitution of man." End of quote. Original balance between federal government and states. The separation of powers between the states and the federal government was designed to reinforce the principle of limited government. The federal government was supreme in all matters relating to its responsibility, but it was specifically restricted from invading the independence and sovereign authority reserved to the states. The founders felt that unless this principle of dual sovereignty was carefully perpetuated, the healthy independence of each would deteriorate and eventually one or the other would become totally dominant. If the federal government became dominant, it would mean the end of local self-government and the security of the individual. On the other hand, if the states became dominant, the federal government would become so weak that the structure of the nation would begin to fractionalize and disintegrate into smaller parts. Alexander Hamilton emphasized these views of the founders when he wrote, quote, "This balance between the national and state governments ought to be dwelt on with particular attention, as it is of the utmost importance. It forms a double security to the people. If one encroaches on their rights, they will find a powerful protection in the other. Indeed, they will both be prevented from overpassing their constitutional limits by certain rivalship which will ever subsist between them." End of quote. Where power rivals power. The founders felt that by having a wholesome balance between the federal and state governments, the people would have recourse to one or the other in case of usurpation or abuse by either. Commenting further on this, Hamilton said, quote, "Power being almost always the rival of power, the general government will at all times stand ready to check the usurpations of the state governments, and these will have the same disposition towards the general government. The people, by throwing themselves into either scale, will infallibly make it preponderate. If their rights are invaded by either, they can make use of the other as the instrument of redress." End of quote. Why the founders would have frowned on the 17th Amendment. But would the states be able to protect themselves from the might of the federal government if the Congress began legislating against states' rights? Originally, the states could protect themselves because U.S. senators were appointed by the state legislatures, and the Senate could veto any legislation by the House of Representatives which they considered a threat to the rights of the individual states. Unfortunately, the protection of states' rights by this means was completely wiped out by the passage of the 17th Amendment in 1913. That amendment provided that senators would henceforth be elected by popular ballot rather than appointed by the state legislatures. This meant the states, as sovereign commonwealths, had lost their representation on the federal level, and their senators would be subject to the same popular pressures during an election campaign as those which confront the members of the House of Representatives. Since that time, there has been no veto power which the states could exercise against the Congress in those cases where a federal statute was deemed in violation of states' rights. The senators, who used to be beholden to their state legislatures for their conduct in Washington, are now beholden to the popular electorate. Federal funds appropriated for a state are generally a source of popular acclaim, and senators, like congressmen, usually hasten to get them approved. Too often it has been of little consequence that those funds might be expended in violation of basic powers reserved to the state. Sometime in the not-too-distant future, the people may want to take another look at the present trend and consider the advantages of returning to the founders' policy of having state legislatures in the United States Senate. It might give us another generation of senators, like Daniel Webster, John Calhoun, and Henry Clay.